So in Matthew 26, 1-16. When Jesus had finished saying all these things, he said to his disciples, "As you know, the Passover is 2 days away. The Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified." Then the chief priests and the elders of the people assembled in the palace of the high priest, whose name was Caiaphas, and they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him. "But not during the feast," they said, "for there may be a riot among the people." While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of a man known as Simon the leper, a woman came to him with an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume, and she poured it on his head as he was reclining at the table. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. "Why this waste?" they asked. "This perfume could have been sold at a high price, and the money given to the poor." Aware of this, Jesus said to them, "Why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. The poor you will always have with you, but you will not always have me. When she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her." Then one of the 12, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, "What are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you?" So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. From then on, Judas watched for an opportunity to hand him over.
I guess thrown up by this little section is, how much do you think Jesus is worth? What's he worth? If you may have opened the email this morning, apparently you're worth 1.3 million. I don't know if you knew that. That may be exciting to you. But that's the figure that the Department of Transport say you're worth. When they devise road safety schemes, should we build this new barrier? They look at the number of deaths per year, times it by 1.3 million, and then do the sum. Is it worth building this? So you're worth 1.3 million. It's a notional figure, of course. You can't cash in your wife or husband or a great aunt Mabel for 1.3 million. That's what you're... How much is Jesus worth? I don't know how you put a figure on it. A couple of hours a week and 100 quid a month. Or maybe a half hour a week, a visit once a year. What's he worth? Because everyone has their price. So we're told. I looked this up, my research this week. The highest ransom ever paid was $135 million. A ransom that Chinese billionaire Li Xing paid for his son back in 1966. That's a long time ago, and that's still the largest ransom ever paid. Wow, you think? There's a man who loves his son. Well, you dig a little bit deeper. At the time, he was worth about $25 billion. So that's half of 1% of his total assets he's willing to pay for his son. At that point, you think, well, that's not very impressive at all, is it? If I was the ransomers, is that the right thing? Why not ask for more? But anyway, they didn't, and they got it. But that's a lot of money, $135 million. What about Jesus? It's got to be worth more, hasn't it? I mean, he's God, the Christians would claim, and Christians would say he's died to ransom me. He's paid a death that I couldn't pay, so I can live a life that I could never live. How much is Jesus worth? Well, this little passage, you get two very different answers. For Judas, just a few coins, not a lot of money. But for the woman, priceless. She thinks he's worth a wildly extravagant gesture. Now, between now and Easter, we're back to Matthew's Gospel, and this little section begins chapter 26, verse 1, when Jesus had finished saying all these things. Five main blocks of teaching you get in Matthew's Gospel, and each one ends with that saying, when Jesus had finished saying these things. This is the last one, so Jesus is done teaching now. The teaching is over, and the last three chapters of Matthew's Gospel, it's his death and resurrection. It's his work. It's not an epilogue. Everything has been building up to this. Here is the heart of the Christian faith, the events of his death and resurrection. And in these three chapters, Matthew loves contrasts, compare and contrast. We'll see this every week. There's him, there's them. Look at the difference, spot the difference. That's what he does continually. So here in verses just at the beginning, 1-5, you've got Jesus who knows everything that's going to take place. Passover's 2 days away, he says, verse 2. The Son of Man will be handed over to crucified. I'm in charge of my own destiny, says Jesus. Meanwhile, by contrast, you've got these sly, plotting priests and chief elders of the people. It's like the politicians and the bishops have made up after their little tiff, and they're all united against Jesus here. So he's in control. They're plotting. They've got to do it in secret. Verse 4, they plotted to arrest Jesus in some sly way and kill him, not during the feast. Or there may be a riot, we don't want to do that. You don't want to kill Usain Bolt in the Olympic Games. Everyone, you know, is thinking and looking about him. You don't want to kill Jesus at Passover. 5 times the normal population of Jerusalem, it's bursting at the seams. He's the big man. You don't want to do that. There's a contrast. But I want to look at the other contrast that is in this passage, really. The woman and Judas. And it is really about how do you value Jesus. So the woman valued Jesus extravagantly, but by contrast, Judas valued Jesus cheaply. Let's look at them in turn. So first of all, the woman, verse 6, she valued Jesus extravagantly, verse 6. While Jesus was in Bethany, in the home of a man known as Simon the leper, well, that's a nice name, isn't it? Wouldn't you like to? Leprosy, of course, is a contagious disease. If you're a leper, you are you're contaminated and you're quarantined away from everyone else. So if he's throwing a dinner party, presumably he's healed, but everyone knows he's a man who's had leprosy. So that's his nickname. It's a nice nickname. Simon the leper, it's a bit like being called Peter the tumor or something like that. So you wouldn't really want to be that sort of name, Peter the Hernia, whatever it may be. But that's at his house, and it's a nice dinner party, but it's about to get a bit controversial. So verse 7, a woman comes in, not named. But a woman came in, the emphasis is on what she's carrying, an alabaster jar of very expensive perfume. The adjectives are piled up somewhat here. It's alabaster, not your normal clay pot, alabaster, expensive. Mark will tell us the perfume is nard, which would have been imported from Nepal. You're an importer, you know, that's expensive business to do that. She's really carrying something. And what does she do with it? Well, she breaks it open. And once you break the neck of an alabaster jar, that's it. It's opened like a bottle of wine. Once you popped it, the value is gone. It's not your sort of Chanel number 5, which you sort of dab a little bit, you know, a little, whatever you do with it. Once it's gone, it's gone. Once it's opened, it's gone. And she pours it, we're told, on his head, on the head of Jesus, as he was reclining at the table. Now again, in Mark's little version, he'll tell us that this pot of perfume was worth a year's wages. So Matthew says, very expensive. That's very expensive. A year's salary. Of course, that varies. A little bit of research. If you're a graduate property surveyor, that's around 25k, depending on your firm, of course, on their various benefits. And I looked at the various, it's interesting, it's all up there. JLL versus whoever, you know, interesting. But 25k, that's still quite a lot of money. Although the average salary for a property surveyor is, I don't know where they get it, in London is around 61. The average salary of a fund manager in London is 93k. At this point, you might think, well, I'm being diddled. Well, bonuses, etc., etc. But I don't know what a year's salary is for you, but it's a lot of money. And to save up a year's salary takes a long time. And this woman takes a year's salary and pours it over Jesus' head. Of course, culturally, that's a flattering thing to do. Someone walked in today and threw a bottle of perfume over you. That's probably you've offended them in some way. But culturally, that's what you do. You arrive at the dinner party and a little perfume, or quite often wrapped up in spice, put on your head to melt on you, to fragrant the atmosphere a little bit, after you've been walking in the midday heat or whatever it may be. This is an extravagant gesture saying, I think you're worthy of an enormous amount. But that's a lot of money, isn't it? I don't know how long it takes to save up a year's salary, whether it's a family heirloom, this jar of perfume. But this woman takes, whatever it is, the 100 grand she's inherited from great aunt Edna and blows it in one moment. Odd, you might say. The most expensive bottle of wine in the world, apparently, is, again, my research just for your benefit, Chateau Margaux 2009. Who would have thought such a recent vintage could be quite so expensive? But a bottle of Chateau Margaux 2009 was sold recently for £122,380. That's more than I spend on a normal bottle of wine. I don't know about you. But given it's the most expensive bottle of the world, it is more than you spend on a normal bottle. Okay, it's a big one, it's 12 litres, which makes it, I get confused on such things, a Balthazar. Some of you will know that. But a Balthazar of wine, let's say this lunchtime, I indeed had inherited £130,000 from great aunt Edna and bought a bottle of wine and cracked it open for the benefit of midweek in Mayfair. And we all, you know, and I would hope you would raise a toast to me for being quite so generous. But I'd say, gone. Gone in one moment. I mean, I don't care how good that wine is. It's not that good, is it? To spend that amount of money on and blow it in that moment. It's just gone. Now you get two different responses here. First, the disciples, verse 8. When the disciples saw this, they were indignant. Why this waste, they asked. This perfume could have been sold at a high price and the money given to poor. Now, I don't know about you, I'm quite sympathetic to that. My wife would describe me as a frugal man. Or some other synonym she occasionally finds for that word. But if you, whatever it is, call it £50,000. You could do a lot with £50,000. You really could do some useful things. How about helping people who are unemployed, those struggling to pay the rent, paying for a homeless shelter for a couple of years? You could use it. That's a lot of money. And they say, well, what's all that about? But Jesus' response is very different. Jesus, in verse 10, aware of this, aware of what they were saying, Jesus said to them, why are you bothering this woman? She has done a beautiful thing to me. Leave her alone. Oh, listen, you so cared about the poor, you could have done that yesterday. You could have gone and spent money on them yesterday. Don't whinge about them now. Now, we need to be a bit careful. Verse 11. The poor you will always have with you, but you'll not always have me. Now, Jesus is not uncaring. If we'd printed the immediate section before this, Matthew 25, the immediate passage before this is all about, if you're a disciple of mine, you'll care for those who are in prison, for those who are homeless, for those who are poor, for those who have fallen on hard times, you'll care for them. So he's not uncaring. The issue here is, Jesus says, I'm not always going to be with you. So you've got to take from this, there is a timeless obligation to care for the poor amongst you. You've got to plan for that. You want to build some churches that care about those sort of things. But that mustn't also prevent you from making further sacrifices. You have what you plan and you organise, but just sacrifices for Jesus' sake. It could be the extravagant one-off sacrifice. You know, every so often, you know, where we are in church, every so often, I'd never get to see who gives anything, but someone writes a cheque for £50,000 to write help on the ministry. You think, golly, that's a significant gesture. I don't care how wealthy you are, that still seems to me like a lot of money. It could be money. For some, it may be, oh look, for 2 years of your life, you care for someone who is in a bad way and is just incredibly draining. And you think, here is someone who has got mental health issues, and for Jesus' sake, I'm going to care for this man and look after him, even though they were a constant drone on me for 2 years. It doesn't really matter. But Jesus said those sort of sacrifices, which are very costly for my sake, I think they're beautiful. I think they're beautiful. So plan what you do with your money. Plan to care for those who haven't got much. Plan all these things. But on top of your planning and your sensible organizing, Jesus, extravagant gestures which cost you, for my sake, I think they're beautiful. And if you're a Christian, I want to think, well, what will it be when I get to heaven? Jesus says to me, that was beautiful. I loved that sacrifice that you made for my sake. That was costly and I know it. What might it be? The woman valued Jesus extravagantly. By contrast, briefly, Judas. Judas values Jesus cheaply. Verse 14, then one of the 12 disciples, the one called Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and asked, what are you willing to give me if I hand him over to you? So they counted out for him 30 silver coins. Judas goes to these chief priests and says, okay, how much is this? How much is Jesus worth? I'll hand him over to you. What's it worth? See, Judas has done a calculation in his head. He's got his mental abacus out and thought, what benefits do I get from following Jesus? And then what benefits can I get from cashing him in? Well, I'm going to cash him in and take the money. And it's not a lot of money. Don't think 30 silver coins, the sort of silver that is used to jewelers. It's the shrapnel in your pocket. 30 silver coins is the price for a dead slave in Exodus 21. It's the derisory wages that you pay a shepherd who no one cares about. It's minimum wage sort of stuff. These officials say to Judas, you'll pay us for Jesus, will you? Well, how about a week's minimum wage at $6.50 an hour? Not a lot of money. Now Judas, it's extraordinary that he does this. So he cashes in Jesus for 250 quid or something, I don't know. Call it that, it's a week's minimum wage. But Judas, he's been with Jesus for a long time. He's seen Jesus perform miracles. He's heard Jesus four times predict he would be betrayed, he would be handed over to the chief priests, he'd die, and then he'd rise again. Judas has been told the plot. He knows how the story ends. Judas has heard Jesus say to him, I'll rescue your soul for eternity. I'll pay for all your sins. He's heard all of this. And yet he thinks, nah, I'm cashing Jesus in for a few quid. He's come to the conclusion he'd rather have the money. Why did he do that? Disappointed? Perhaps Jesus isn't the Messiah he wanted to follow? Although it does seem that cash is the thing that drives him. Jesus does the sum in his head and thinks, nah, following Jesus isn't worth it. That's not going to get me much money. And so he cashes in while he can. Do you ever do that? Do you ever do a little mental sum in your head? Would it be worth me becoming a Christian and following Jesus? Would that be worth it? Because life is pretty good at the moment, and what's he offering? I don't know. Not sure. Or even as a Christian think, what is it worth? Should I follow Jesus? Or am I a bit, he's a bit disappointing sometimes. Life is not as I would choose it to be. And so I don't think he's worth that much. Oh, maybe a couple of hours a week, 100 quid a month, but nothing more. Nothing that's going to really dent my lifestyle. A little tip for Jesus, that's okay. What is Jesus worth? These two, the woman valued Jesus extravagantly, Judas valued him cheaply. So just before we finish, why the difference? What does she see that he didn't see? Let's get back in verse 12. Here's Jesus interpreting for us. Verse 12, when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. I tell you the truth, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. Verse 13, fairly extraordinary prediction, isn't it, from a shepherd from Galilee? Oh, a woman pouring a load of perfume on my head will become one of the most famous stories in the whole of this planet.
So yeah, very good.
Well, it has. But verse 12 is the key interpretation, I think. Verse 12, when she poured this perfume on my body, she did it to prepare me for burial. Now, unsurprisingly, in the culture of the day, when someone died, then you prepare them for burial, just like today. The undertaker doesn't sort of paint the smile on and put the makeup on someone while they're still alive. They do it when they're dead. And just so in those days. The only people who weren't scented, perfumed, before going into their graves were criminals. Because they just got chucked in a pit. So it seems that Jesus is saying, oh, this woman has got something, perhaps even more than she knew. I'm going to die a criminal's death. And she's got that in some way. That's why she's preparing me for my burial now. Her extravagant gift is because she knew what Jesus would do for her. That he would die a horrible death so that she might be forgiven for an eternity with God. Many years ago, I think it was 2003, I was invited to a dinner in honour of a soldier, Captain Rambahardur Limbu. I do remember his first name, I'll read it. Captain Limbu is one of the few living recipients of the Victoria Cross. And this was a dinner given in his honour at Sandhurst, the British Military Academy. And you can read still online the citation of why he got his Victoria Cross. It's back in 1966. He was on his conflict in Indonesia and invaded Borneo and Brunei in the north, and he was one of the soldiers defending the land. And he and his men, he was with 10 others, approached the front, and three machine gun nests holding him down. He took out one with a grenade, and then a number of his men were shot, and two severely shot. So he was in a forward post of five of them. Two killed, two others injured. The two injured men, well, the citation reads, for 20 minutes under enemy fire, he picked up these two men, one by one, and took them back to British forces so they could receive medical care. All the while exposed to enemy fire. And when he finished that, he went back, picked up their two machine guns, and stormed up and took out the other machine gun. It's real, so you just got to think Clint Eastwood, Where Eagles Dare, you know. This guy, he's extraordinary. And so the Queen gave him his Victoria Cross for exceptional valour in the face of the enemy. As you know, the highest award a soldier can receive in this country. Now, not everyone valued his work. So, very sadly, the year after he'd received his Victoria Cross, he was on a train in India, and all his medals were stolen. It's just sad, isn't it? You don't get a Victoria Cross very often. But someone had thought, what are these? A bit of shiny metal, I can flog that for something. They didn't know who he was, they didn't know what he'd done, they didn't know what the medals were worth, so they nicked them. It's alright, the Queen gave him another one the following year, so he got to go meet the Queen again. This wasn't all bad. Some people just had no idea what he was, what he'd done. By contrast, back in 2003, okay, he was a fairly rotund bloke by this stage of his life. But there was a dinner given in his honour, because he was visiting the UK, lives in Nepal now. And amongst the soldiers there were some of the descendants of the men that he'd brought back under flak. And they valued him. They honoured him. It was very moving as they tearfully expressed their thanks to this man who, in a very real sense, had saved them. It would have been there otherwise. They knew what he was worth because they knew what he had done for them. This woman valued Jesus highly because she got that he would die to save her from her sins for eternity. Judas had heard all that, just didn't believe it, so didn't really care. That's the difference. She knew what he was about to do. How much is Jesus worth? This woman poured out perfume at enormous expense. We'll see next time Jesus say, "This is my blood poured out for many." See, the woman, she poured out perfume on a man who was very wonderful. But Jesus pours out his life for people who are not wonderful for people like you and me, who know they've made mistakes, who have rejected God. And that makes him worth everything. Everything. No one else will give their life to save you for eternity. And he's worth everything.
Let me lead us in a prayer. Father, my simple prayer is that we would see Jesus clearly for who he is, his supreme worth, as the only one who can rescue us for eternity. That we would see him as this woman does. If we've never seen that before, or if we've been a Christian for years, we would value him extravagantly because of his work for us. Amen.
Amen.